seconds.
I saw this illumination that was moving with respect to the stars. We were smart enough to not say, Houston, there's a light out there that's following us.
Extraterrestrials could very well have populated or made structures on the far side of the moon.
Many astronauts, academics, and researchers believe that at some point in time, an ancient alien civilization may have inhabited our moon, leaving behind giant structures, monuments, monoliths, and pyramids upon its surface. Some researchers theorize that advanced beings still occupy the moon to this day, the watchers from afar.
People like William Tompkins from this naval intelligence beyond top secret operation interacting with extraterrestrials. And he's talking about the moon being the command center for a reptilian race.
As we make observations within nature and the animal kingdom from a distance as to not interfere, the moon would be a perfect location to safely observe the Earth and humanity.
There's a lot of evidence that suggests the moon itself might actually be artificial or a possibly artificially modified natural satellite. In addition to that, there are all kinds of structures on the moon itself which appear to be artificial, which indicate that at one time it was a base for a very advanced civilization. May have been human, may have been alien, may have been both. There may have been multiple epochs of inhabitation of the moon.
Everything I've seen on the moon is in ruins. That doesn't mean it's not inhabited, because the fact is that the best place you could possibly have a base to operate around the Earth, if you were working on the Earth or you wanted to move out into the solar system from the Earth, would be on the moon. Now, I've seen lots of videos of craft traveling to and from the moon that appear to be authentic to me, and my guess would be that the moon is inhabited.
As well as its alien presence, there are speculations that the moon is a hollow-body construction.
There were two Russian scientists saying that they believed that the moon was a constructed body. They thought that it was a planetoid that had been hollowed out, and everything that was going on, basically, apart from some stuff on the surface on the far side of the moon, is going on inside. What they were describing, long before it actually became fact in the Star Wars movies, was the Death Star. It's what they were describing in 1970.
So it's things like this that make certain astronomers think, and researchers, that yeah, our moon is some kind of artificial satellite, like George Lucas' Death Star, put into our orbit around our planet, not to destroy us, as in the Star Wars Death Star movies, but as a satellite to watch us, and as literally a base to observe Earth.
And they reckoned that a very highly advanced race had hollowed out the moon, and therefore, because there's so many anomalies about the moon, it's unbelievable. Therefore, it can be explained why, as one NASA scientist said, the moon is inside out. What's on the surface of the moon should be inside.
Scientific data and analysis performed on the moon's surface seemingly point to the same hollow-bodied conclusion.
On Apollo 16, they actually fired the lunar module, Orion, crashed it deliberately in to the surface of the moon, and used the seismometers from the other landing sites to record what happened. And what happened is the moon basically rang like a bell for about 14 hours, which indicates that it is, for the most part, probably hollow. In other words, there are vast caverns of space inside the moon, which just is not a thing that you would have in a natural body. You would have everything compressed. There just wouldn't be these massive cavities inside.
We can also see anomalies within the shallow depths of crater impacts upon the surface of the moon. Michael Sala explains.
Well, there's a number of anomalies on the moon's surface that suggest that it's hollow. First are the craters themselves. Some of them are hundreds of miles in diameter, which would mean that you would have a very deep crater, but in fact the crater is quite shallow, nowhere near deep enough. If you actually have an asteroid, a comet, or some sort impacting the moon, creating a 100-kilometer-wide crater, you would expect the depth of that crater to go down 100 kilometers or more. But in fact, it only goes down much less than you would expect. I don't know the exact depth, but certainly enough that would make it very suspicious that beneath the moon's crust is a very hard exterior shell of some sort, some kind of metal that can withstand planetary impact by space debris, asteroids, and so forth. And so to me, that suggests that the moon is an artificial body and that it's on the interior of the moon that you actually have huge bases. And, you know, there are things about the moon in terms of, you know, first of all, how can a body that is only a quarter the size of the Earth in diameter be captured by the Earth? I mean, in terms of conventional physics, it's not possible. It wouldn't be. It's too big. And then why would it be tidally locked? What that does is create an area of the moon, the far side, which can't be observed from the Earth. But for those on the moon that have advanced technologies, that have established bases underneath the moon, you know, they could have all their ships parked on the far side of the moon, visiting the Earth, doing whatever they need to do, monitoring the Earth, without us ever knowing what's there.
Could the moon be some kind of artificial satellite? A base to observe the Earth and all its inhabitants? There are many baffling aspects surrounding the moon and its placement within the heavens. Its tidal lock, synchronized with its rate of revolution, rotating exactly once every time it circles the Earth. Forever hiding one side from our view, the dark side of the moon. How did this celestial body come to be in the Earth's orbit? Its size and position in retrospect to Earth is unique within the universe. Could the moon have been strategically placed in position by some intelligent design?
You look at the ancient tribes and the ancient accounts of various chroniclers who talk about the time before the moon was there. And you look at the Zulu accounts and many other accounts which talk of the moon in terms of being symbolically an egg. And I talked to a Zulu shaman, high shaman called Kredo Mutwa, a long time ago. And I said to him, why do you symbolize the moon as an egg? And he said, because we say that it's been hollowed out, like a yolk taken out. That's why we symbolize it as an egg, which is what these Russian scientists were talking about. Then you have the Zulu legends of where the moon came from, that the Chitahuri, as they call them, the reptilian race, with two leaders called Wawani and Umpanku, stole the moon from the great python and basically positioned it where it is. And when you look at the descriptions of Wawani and Umpanku, the descriptions correlate with the descriptions of Enlil and Enki and the Anunnaki, descriptions of a non-human race visiting Earth that come from the area of Sumer and Mesopotamia.
Within the 1950s and 1960s, there was a concerted effort to reach the moon. It is documented within Project Paperclip that after World War II, the American government recruited many of Germany's leading scientists and mathematicians, rumored to have been working on top-secret anti-propulsion technology systems during the German war effort, producing and engineering designs such as the famous Bell craft and the Hanabu saucers.
So when people hear this information, they are shocked that beginning in 1954, October, we didn't need surface roads. We had figured out zero point energy from studying not only what humans were developing from the era of Tesla and T. Townsend Brown, who was the genius who was doing things with high voltage systems and crystals with things levitating. Literally, that was going on in the late 20s. And it was reproduced in Germany before World War II in the late 20s, in the Kolosky-Frost experiment. What you see is that that stream of covert research into high voltage, high frequency electromagnetic fields that would give you free energy and levitation, joined with the reverse engineering of extraterrestrial vehicles in the mid 40s and after Roswell and perhaps even before Roswell. Add to that, that at the end of World War II, the OSS that became the CIA went to Germany and acquired a disc and also a bell-shaped object that Adolf Hitler was working on, which was his secret weapon, which this is 100% true, which was based on so-called anti-gravity and electromagnetic fields. Proper term is electromagnetic gravitic. So electromagnetogravitic, EMG. So those were brought over under Operation Paperclip. So all of these, all that secrecy from the World War II era on became more and more compartmentalized the more they had breakthroughs, including in October 54, gravity control was mastered. Now, a man who was at the Naval Research Labs, the biggest Department of Defense lab in the United States, personally told me that he was in the vault. And his name's Rick Foch. He had been in the vault and seen the documentation that we had mastered gravity control in October 54. And also, before that, this free energy, zero point energy. So that means that if that were to come out, it would be the end of oil, gas, coal, nuclear power, centralized utilities, road construction, surface roads, engines and ships, rockets, jets, all of it's obsolete. We would lift the burden that we have placed upon Gaia because we have overstayed our welcome in terms of the technological system we're using, which is really an 1800s paradigm of fossil fuels. Even atomic power, nuclear power, is from the mid-40s. So everything since the mid-40s is in a black box, and we're killing the planet, keeping it secret.
The issue regarding the Nazis and their flying saucer research is there is a basis in fact here. You know, we all know now that there were certain German scientists during World War II, I think most prominently Victor Schauberger, who were doing very interesting, let's say even genius level work on disc-shaped airframes. Schauberger was a self-taught genius who was then commandeered by the SS to work for them during the war. He did create disc-shaped craft. They were tested.
The question is, were aliens helping the Germans develop technology? And the fact is, the Germans are very bright guys. You know, there's the old joke that heaven is where the mechanics are German. You know, hell is where the police are German. The Germans were brilliant, absolutely brilliant engineers. And it looks like there's a trace all the way back to 18th century Prussia, where they were working on and interested in developing technologies, airship technologies, and anti-gravity technologies. So I don't think that the aliens are required for the Germans to have achieved the things that they achieved technologically. It wouldn't hurt. And there's also the fact that you have people like Hermann Oberth, who was actually the mentor of Dr. Wernher von Braun, the physicist behind von Braun's engineering, said we had help from people from other worlds.
In my mind, you have a similar thing with Victor Schauberger as with the ancient Hindu texts on Vimanas, which talk about Mercury being part of the power system of these ancient craft. And supposedly using Mercury would be also in a kind of a Schauberger type vortex, but you'd be using Mercury instead of water. And Mercury has many unusual qualities. It's an element. It's a metal, it's a liquid, it's a conductor. You can do things with mercury that you can't really do with any other metal or liquid or element, really. And that would be creating things like mercury gyros. And a mercury gyro would then be a sealed gyro with mercury inside it, moving as a liquid in a vortex or gyroscopic kind of action. And then if you were to introduce electricity into that gyro of mercury, you would electrify that mercury and it would become a plasma, an electrified gas that's spinning in a toroidal or gyroscopic type movement. And scientists have
used gyroscopes for years as an example of artificial gravity and anti-gravity. So in a sense, a craft that's using this kind of vortex technology, especially one with Mercury, is a very viable kind of flying saucer type craft. And the other interesting thing about such a craft like that is that once you introduced electricity to the Mercury vortex, it's gonna light it up and the thing will be extremely bright. So if you were to see this thing flying, it would be much as many UFOs are described, where they are this spinning top kind of gyro thing that's also very brightly lit, sometimes with even lights that are flashing or flickering or spinning along the edge of the craft. And this is exactly how a Mercury gyro would really look like and act like.
Well, the Germans were mounting expeditions all over the world in the 1930s because they were looking primarily for mystical devices. You know, their technology was very, very advanced. Their aviation technology was way beyond anything the United States developed.
The ancients were fascinated with Mercury all over the world. The Chinese and the ancient Mexicans, Mayans, and Mercury is usually an offshoot of gold production, actually. But yeah, when you have the ancient texts, like the Vimana texts, Mercury is clearly talked about there. So Mercury was a very important thing for the ancient people. But Mercury is a deadly poison. Working with Mercury, you shouldn't do that. Mercury gas is completely deadly. Mercury needs to be handled very, very carefully and in a closed environment. So exactly what ancient people were doing with Mercury is kind of a mystery, although spacecraft and stuff is really the obvious thing to do with it, and other mining technologies. Mercury really comes from a mineral called cinnabar, and cinnabar is a Sanskrit word. So even geologically and mineralogically, words for mercury and cinnabar come really from ancient Sanskrit. Mercury, too, in Western tradition, Mercury was the Greek god of communication. He flew through the air. And so with the ancient people, it would seem that Mercury and flight are very carefully associated with each other.
These highly skilled departments are capable of developing and suppressing advanced technology years ahead of the public standard. Possible technologies such as anti-gravity propulsion systems, reusable energy power sources, and aerial vehicles so advanced they can perform outside of the Earth's atmosphere. There is much speculation that this advanced technology has indeed been developed and is in fact used today within NASA and various black budget military departments. A highly secretive space agency hidden from the public within classified networks of the shadow government.
Anti-gravity technology has been suppressed since the first study showed that this was very feasible, and I think that it dates from the Los Angeles Air Raid incident of 1942, where the Army and the Navy were able to retrieve some craft that were shot down by the artillery barrage. And when they studied it, they actually found that these technologies, anti-gravity, were feasible. But the war effort meant that they couldn't really investigate it until the war was completed.
And in the 50s, you had people like T. Townsend Brown and others openly talking about gravity control, gravity research, doing anti-gravity. It was a topic that was being tossed around quite a bit. But suddenly, in the late 50s, they just put a lid on it. You didn't hear about this. You didn't hear about scientists talking about gravity control or artificial gravity or anything like that. Everything suddenly switched to rockets, jets. They also essentially suppressed knowledge of Tesla. And that was part of the thing, is that NASA and the military, they wanted us to think of space travel as being something that's done with rockets, lighting a big giant firecracker under your ass, and going to the moon. But Tesla died in 1943 during the war. If he had survived World War II and had
any way been part of our space program, we would have a completely different space program, one that with electric type of craft, anti-gravity, all of those things.
Here's the truth. The truth is the patent dumping has already started because we just got a patent a couple days ago of the TR-3B, this triangular-shaped, electrostatic, electrogravitically powered aircraft that everybody's known has existed for 10 or 20 years now, and they actually just dumped the patent on the internet. So that's what's going to happen, I think, is we're going to have this steady release of patented information that's just going to come out. It's going to appear on Google Patents somewhere. There's not going to be any big announcements. Oh, here's an anti-gravity device. But it's slowly going to come out because it has to, because we have to transition from the oil-based economy to the new economy, whatever it's going to be. And trust me, I believe we are still going to have an economic system. We're still going to have money. We're still going to have some form of capitalism, because that's the only way that you can grow into outer space. You can grow into the solar system, is you've got to have an economy. And capitalism gives you that capability, because eventually the planet is going to become so wealthy, but the population is going to continue to increase, that the only way to keep the system moving forward and generate growth is to go off-world. So when I look at it, I think that by the time we get done with everything that happens during this period, we're probably going to be looking at a new system, maybe based on helium-3 or some other energy source like that. So, you know, I don't see that we can have an immediate crash transition from an oil-based economy to a free energy system. I think that would be too shocking, too disruptive, would cause a lot of damage. So I think we're gonna have a steady, slow walk kind of release of this information over the next few years, maybe over the next 8 or 10 years.
I think that they are about to achieve, if they have not already achieved, significant artificial intelligence. And I do believe that they are much more advanced with quantum computing than we're led to believe.
I think that they started to expand. And I think that we can see the leftover traces. As humans, we're not very clean and subtle. You know, when you look at the moon, you can see tracks on the moon of vehicles moving around. In one case, you can see the vehicle itself. On the moon, you can find installations if you know where to look. And I think that they executed a program to cover it up, whether it's the notion of Kubrick faking the moon landing, or whether it's probes crashing into Mars because we can't set the altimeter correctly.
And so you would work through, have organizations like NASA as your cover, and then you would work through the DOD, which would also be your cover for something even more clandestine. I think this is exactly what has happened.
When we start getting into the upper, highest level echelon of the cover-up of the UFO phenomenon, I still feel that I need to be careful and researchers need to be careful.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been arrested at the Ecuadorian embassy in London.
Facebook taking steps to enforce its hate speech policies, now permanently banning controversial figures and some organizations.
Who's the actual person at the top of it? Is it David Rockefeller? Is it some member of the Rothschild family? Is it some member that we don't know about within the deep black budget community? Or is it the aliens themselves in one form or another? I guess we can ask ourselves, what is the likelihood that the non-human intelligences that are behind the UFO phenomenon are managing the cover-up to some extent? I think we can say a few things. One, we can say they do not have an interest in being out there, in being publicly acknowledged. They do operate by stealth. I think they've always operated by stealth. So they have an interest in maintaining a cover of secrecy. Toward that end, if I were tasked with doing counterintelligence on the cover-up, I would have to consider the likelihood that they themselves have some role to play in the secrecy.
We are being assimilated. It's a process, step by step by step. And to do it, our perception has to be hijacked, and our sense of self has to be hijacked. Where I'm coming from is that we are a point of attention. When I say we, I mean at the deepest level of perception of being, beyond all the garments we call bodies and even electromagnetic fields. We are a state of awareness, nothing else. And all these vehicles that awareness experiences through are simply means of experience. And what has happened, and this is described in many
ancient texts.
Is that that state of awareness, that infinite self, that which all of us are an expression of, we're all points of attention within the one infinite awareness, has been perceptually enslaved in a state of perception that I call phantom self. That is the perception that who we are is our name, our race, our religion, our life story, our background, our job, our income bracket, and that's who we are. Now, this perceptional delusion of mistaking an experience for infinite self or true self means that you, first of all, perceptually squeeze the sense of the possible. You present people that fall for that with a sense of little me, I've got no power, and a sense of I can't. Because if you take most people in their perceptions of self and their perceptions of reality, they'll say, well, what can I do? There's nothing we can do. And if you are then persuaded that you have no power, then you give the power you really have but don't know about to authority over you. And that perception of authority has power and we don't then creates another level of the control system. And we are being manipulated. This is a much bigger story. We are being manipulated to a point where we are attached technologically to artificial intelligence technology.
There are many mysteries yet to be discovered past the realm of secrecy, available only to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers. Thanks for watching The Fifth Kind. We hope you enjoyed this production. You can watch more of the series Deep Space, along with an amazing collection of thought-provoking programs and documentaries exclusively on Gaia. Please click on our affiliate publisher links in the video description. Thanks again for your support. You can find more videos on our channel page linked below. Please click the big red button to subscribe. It's free and really does help us out when you do. Don't forget to click the bell icon to turn on channel notifications so you never miss a new video.